on the inside. She got the scoop on the ones to watch, on the ones that's hot. No one can do it quite like Caroline. No one can do it quite like Caroline. It's time for Caroline.
This interview is super exciting because I have one of the most inspired couples joining me today. This is Vanessa and Miles Adcox. Both of them are incredible people in their own right, but together they make this insane power couple. They are so tuned in to themselves, and they've done so much work on themselves personally that they now together are so strong. And it's so inspiring to hear their stories individually. Vanessa is an actress. She lived in LA. She comes from a big entertainment family. Miles grew, I'm pretty sure he grew up in Nashville. I think he's a Nashville native. But he, through a series of careers, found himself wanting so much more. And so he started this on-site clinic. And it's amazing. So many people have gone there just to work on themselves, get to the root of their real problems. That is what Vanessa and Miles are all about. They're about getting to the root of who they are, their real problems, so then they can fix that and then go on to change the world with their beautiful whole selves. Be prepared to be inspired. This is such a great interview. I cannot stress it enough. It is such a great interview, especially for couples. You need to hear what they have to say because they do not claim to be perfect. They just claim to be getting in there and getting real and dealing with it in healthy ways. So get excited. Here's Vanessa and Miles. Okay. Hey, hey, hey. I'm here with the Adcoxes. Adcoxes?
That's it.
You guys are probably one of the most inspiring couples, I would have to say. Thanks. You guys are both so incredible in your own right, but together y'all are this force, like this power, this force of nature. So I need to break down first off who you guys are. This is Vanessa and this is Miles, and you guys are both influencers in your own right, but together y'all, like I said, are a power couple. Miles, tell me a little bit about what you do, because you have an incredible organization that you've been doing for a long time within the music industry, but also it's on Dr. Phil. I was like checking you out. You're on Dr. Phil and all sorts of TV shows, healing the world.
I don't know about that. We're doing the best we can, but yeah, I've got a company called OnSite, and we're an emotional wellness lifestyle brand, and we deliver a lot of personal growth content, but we also offer a whole series of personal growth workshops, therapeutic workshops, and I've got a long-term residential program too. But when I say personal growth, I know that's kind of light, but it's pretty diverse in its offering. It can be people stuck and struggling, or people that just want to raise their EQ, or just be emotionally in a better spot, or become a better parent, better friend, better leader, all that stuff.
So how does one get into that business? Because I feel like I would be your great candidate. I have been I need all the emotional workshops I could get. Up until I hit about 35, I was like, I lived in therapy, basically. Yeah. So I would be your perfect client. How does one start a business like that?
Well, for me, I got into it through the lens of my own experience. I was in the wrong career, had quite a bit of success in it.
What career was it?
I was in the sports industry.
Okay.
And so I was on the business side of sports.
Okay.
Media, selling media and broadcasting and all that. And it was fun, and it was what I thought I was always supposed to do. But really, I did it because it was the only imprint that I had. I grew up as kind of a man's man in a small southern town, and if you didn't hunt, fish, and play sports, then you weren't really a man. And so,
yeah, totally. We didn't have that's the norm for what a lot of men. You did a post about that the other day when you said a man should be vulnerable. It was like a long post, and I read the whole thing. And I was like, what were you saying in that? Basically, like a man should be able to be vulnerable, like to not have to be so strong.
It was a good one. It was the one that you had a lot of guys reach out to you after that.
I did.
Yeah. It was nice that like a man would say that about being a man.
Well, I've learned it the hard way because it's not necessarily that men should be vulnerable. It's just that vulnerability is part of the human condition, and that men are not exempt from that. But culturally, men have this perception that we're supposed to be hard and have this exterior, and that vulnerability is weakness, and it's absolutely backwards and wrong. So it took a lot of emotional pain, and you said you spent a lot of time in therapy. I did too.
Me too.
Love some therapy. That's why we're all so healthy.
Yeah, I'm so healthy.
Yes.
Well, I'll speak to that. I think therapy, and I know we're joking, but I think it is completely misbranded. I think it's set up in a way that this is where you go when you're broken. Mm-hmm. And it's not what's wrong with you that you would try to rewrite your narrative and become a better version of yourself. It's what's right with you.
Yes.
And I think the world's starting to wake up to that, but I think everybody needs a good dose of it. Mm-hmm. But back to what you said, there wasn't a lot of artistic influence or music programs. And I didn't even know that kind of soft side of me could exist. And or creative side, I should say. And I didn't discover it until well into my 20s. And when I realized it, I had a bit of an identity crisis because I was on this one track, but I had interest in others and just didn't allow myself permission to be who I truly was, which led to depression, anxiety, and some of the stuff that followed. I was just disconnected mm-hmm. from my body. So that landed me into some painful experiences, but it also gave me a lights coming on opportunity. So I kind of the right people came around me at the right time, and I just fell in love with the change process. And I knew I was going to do it for a living almost right away. And I didn't know how, but I thought I've got to kind of find a way to be a part of people's change process.
Yeah.
So that's it.
How did you decide to start a clinic? And tell me what OnSite even is.
So we've got about a 75-acre retreat center west of Nashville, 75-acre. We've got a 75-bed retreat center on about 200 acres west of Nashville. It's beautiful. You've got to come out and see it sometime.
I want to do the whole session with Michael, husband. Yeah. I feel like we're in a great place. I love my husband so much. Vanessa and I were talking, like, we talk stuff out. We'll get down into the nitty-gritty, but to have tools, therapy is what helped us move forward in our marriage in such a positive way because we've identified tools to communicate with each other mm-hmm. and that you don't have to, like, freak out and like lose your mind. You can see this is triggering this because of this. So I would love to do that.
Yeah,
I would love to have you. I think you would love it. But I worked in the crisis space for a while. So when I first got into it, I got trained and certified in doing interventions, which is what got me into the entertainment community.
Because everyone's in crisis.
I was in that. Not everyone. There's quite a bit of it there.
It's probably higher dosage.
And I was in Nashville, and there wasn't a lot of interventions in Nashville. So I would get the calls when so-and-so was struggling with addiction or just the wheels were falling off with this. And I liked it. There were parts of it I was good at and parts of it it wasn't for me. And I learned that after doing it for a little while. But I knew I wanted to be in the space. And then I went to work in kind of the treatment space. And I worked, treatment meaning residential long-term care. And that was it was amazing. And I so honor a lot of my colleagues and friends that still have programs and do those. But it felt limiting to who would have access to it.
Right.
And in other words, it's pretty predictable. You know, somebody crashes out with addiction or mental health.
Right.
They come into an inpatient setting. You do the best you can with them in 30 days and try to send them back out in the world. And I thought, that's great for that population. What about the rest of us?
Right.
And so I long dreamed of a place that had a bigger mission and a wider door for all of us to be able to walk through, whether we think we're stuck struggling or not. Mm-hmm. So we came up with the workshop or seminar model, which I didn't pioneer it. I actually bought a company that was pre-existing and doing some of it. And then since then, we've innovated and helped recreate a lot of content. And now that's OnSite today.
Okay, so how does this make for marriage? Because you guys, first off, tell me your story. Vanessa was telling me a little bit about y'all's love story, which is, can you give us a little brief summary of how y'all met? Because it was almost kind of love at first sight for you guys.
Yeah.
And you weren't intentionally trying to go on a date, fall in love. So I want to know how you guys met. And then how you guys, with this healthy framework that y'all have in place, how do you apply it to marriage?
It's so funny because, like I was telling you, when you do something like that for a living, it's not like you have all the tools.
Right.
I mean, you have them, but it's hard to pull them out when you're in the middle of something. But he's been really helpful with helping me with some of my stuff too. Obviously, I've gone to therapy before, and I've done the program out of OnSite, and it's phenomenal. But no, to answer your question, we met. I was visiting. I'm from Los Angeles originally.
An actress.
Been acting since I was 12, you know, was really into it.
On a big soap opera.
I was on a soap opera back in the day.
Which one?
I was on The Young and the Restless.
Heck yeah, that's like the soap opera of all soap operas.
If you want to be on one, that might be the one you might want to be on.
Were in movies. The Shark movie.
Oh yeah.
That's what got you to Miles.
Yes. That's hilarious.
Yes, I've done a bunch of movies, but mostly like Christmas movies, Hallmarky kind of, not the all best Christmas. Kind. But great fun yes. movies. But then I did do a movie called Sand Sharks yes. with a friend, a girl who became a friend of mine, and she decided to move out to Nashville to do music.
And this is Brooke Hogan.
Yeah,
Brooke Hulk Hogan. The Hulk Hogan's daughter, but she's yeah. in her own right a badass. Yeah,
she's wonderful.
So sweet.
She's awesome. I thank her for the reason I mean, I wouldn't probably have met Miles. Well, I might have met him a different way, but she asked me to come out here to visit her for her birthday when she had just moved here, and I was kind of on the fence about it, and she actually bought me my plane ticket because I wasn't coming. I'm like, I am not going to Nashville. I have no desire to go to Nashville.
Oh, those cowboys. Yeah,
no. And this is before Nashville had any good restaurants. So I thought, you know, I'm not going to come out there. But she ended up buying me a ticket. I came out, and we were at a restaurant, unless our parents are asking. It's actually really a bar.
It's a bar restaurant. Well, we technically met at the bar.
We were at the bar.
Depending on who asked.
Most love stories start at the bar. The best ones do.
The best relationships are at the bar. BB, yeah. Best bar relationship. So, yeah. So we were at the tavern in Nashville, and I was sitting at the bar with her, with Brooke, and we had seen Miles when we walked in.
And were you like, oh, that I want to get to know that guy?
I really wasn't. I don't know why. I think I saw him. I thought he was so cute. I was like, oh, he had a flannel on, and it was weird.
Flannels are so cute. Oh, but they're cute
now.
LA.
I'm okay. from LA, but okay. now I love flannels. Okay. I can't buy him enough flannels now.
back then, you're like,
yeah, he's
oh,
trying
no.
to move away now from the flannels, and I'm like, here's another flannel. But so I did see him, and then I will let him take over the story because he tells the story so much better than me.
Oh,
because he actually has a purpose behind it. So.
So, all right, so I'll tell the abbreviated.
You love birds.
I'll tell the abbreviated version. This is the first time we've ever done anything like
yeah,
this.
Yeah, we've never
together.
Done a
I just
podcast
thought about
yet.
It. You're so
I
cute.
Feel really excited.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, you guys, y'all should just get married all over again. If y'all,
maybe we will. Want to marry us?
Yeah, you ordain I would try. Yes, I will ordain a marriage. Look, y'all are the cutest. Okay, So tell your love story, Miles. Let's hear it.
Okay, so I had just come back from a speaking gig, and I was actually overseas, and so I had a long flight from London and was watching movies, and I watched a movie called We Bought a Zoo. You know?
Yes.
You know that one? Okay, so... A lot of men would not, because it's kind of a chick flick. But that's when I love watching chick flicks on long planes. But there is a theme in that movie where it's Matt Damon and Scarlett Johansson. But Scarlett was who he met after his wife had passed. So you remember his first wife, he met her. And
such a sad
was,
movie.
I know.
All you need is 20 seconds of courage and it'll change your life.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes, that is so true, too.
It is true. Mm-hmm. And for me, I can tend to be... I think it's funny that a lot of people would think that because of the space that we're in, we're this picture of emotional health, and we're actually a hot mess most days.
Totally.
I'm glad that y'all are real, though. Oh, yeah. But see, I think being a picture of emotional health is admitting that you're a hot mess.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because you're not going to avoid the human condition, especially when you're combining lives with someone. Okay, so go ahead.
Well, there was a gift and a burden of learning how to analyze yourself and your process, because you can become over analytical.
Mm-hmm.
And it tripped me up for years, because I had this I dreamed of being married and having a family, and obviously the dream we all have, a lot of people have, but I had it as perfect.
Mm.
Which doesn't exist, but it was just unconscious.
Yes.
So I would either get in a bad relationship or I would get in one that wasn't perfect. And I struggled relationally for a while, which honestly, when you're the face of a place that teaches people how to do healthy relationship, that's tough. Serious. It was.
So people are like, Miles, why can't you work out a relationship?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, aren't you supposed to be the relationship guru?
I can help you, but I can't do it. And finally, you know, I kind of surrendered to the idea that the tools that we sometimes have when we're really in intimacy and up close in our own process, they go out the window.
Amen to that.
Mm-hmm. And we just have to sometimes go with our instinct, our heart, our gut, and sometimes the bigger picture to help us navigate that. And that's what happened in this case. That little simple phrase, with all the therapeutic jargon I know about how to take emotional risk and commit, all that shit went out the window. And I had one little phrase, it's 20 seconds of courage. And I thought, you know what? And so I see her.
So you see Vanessa. When you see Vanessa, what do you think when you see
her?
Well,
I wasn't in a great space. I'd just come out of a relationship, and I was like, I'm going to give this some time. I'm not going to date. You said the same
I was
thing.
In the same place, too.
So you guys are in identical situations.
I'll tell you how sad I was.
Much.
I was actually out with the intern.
Who was like 12. Well, she was like 21. But.
Oh, so you were like dying for
it
a friend.
Wasn't, mm-hmm. It wasn't my idea, but I think she kind of felt sorry for me, and she's like, you should go out tonight. And so... But I did, and she actually turned into a great friend. She's been great. But I was out with the intern, saw Vanessa, and I was like, she's beautiful. Oh, she's stunningly beautiful.
Yes, I do.
But I saw her from across the room. She was sitting at the bar with Brooke, and I typically, historically, have never approached. I just don't do that. To hit on somebody, because I just don't have much game. I'm kind of clumsy. So I was like, all right, beautiful woman. This is where I would just acknowledge that and move on. But I thought, all you need is 20 seconds of courage.
So what is the worst? You owe Matt Damon, too.
Yeah.
Yes. What's the worst that could happen?
Seriously, what's the worst that can happen? Well, in those 20 seconds of courage, it feels like the end of the world.
Because you get rejected.
I could throw my drink in your face like they do in the movies.
Yeah.
No. But I went for it. So I start walking towards her.
Oh, my God. And you fell.
Well, that would have been a better
story. Fell hard in love.
No, it's just gone. Oh, snap.
So I got from like me to you, and I panicked on the inside. And I was like, exit, stage left, stage. You know, I was like, get out of here, because I didn't know what I was going to say.
Oh, yeah, but now do you see him approaching in the panic?
I can see it. I can
you're
see
happening.
It.
Okay.
Well, so I got that close without having any line or anything.
Oh, my
I was
gosh.
Like, this is not a good plan.
I'm stressing for you right now.
Yeah.
I feel like hot sweats.
Well, I was just getting ready to pull out, like,
like dart, like abort, abort. Yes.
The minute I got to when I was about to pull out, she pulled up her camera to take a selfie.
And you're like, thank you, Jesus.
I did say that? I'm not Jesus. I think I thank God, but I was just
like, one or two.
And I just reached and grabbed it. And I said, can I take that picture?
No. Stop.
That was it. That was my move.
Oh, that was
the move.
The universe was helping you out.
It did.
Oh, yeah.
So I took the picture. It started a conversation.
Yeah.
One cool thing, something we do at on-site, a lot of people that have been there know, is we ask people not to reveal their profession the whole time they're there.
Okay.
Which is very cool because people, we get so wrapped up in what we do.
You get so defined by what you do, who you are.
And so it's a thing that is kind of pretty special as part of our process, but I'd never really practiced it outside of it. Unconsciously, we didn't try, but we talked for an hour. And neither of us ever mentioned what the other did for a living.
Stop.
How cool is that?
So did you know right away when you were chatting with him? Oh, yes.
Well, I didn't. Okay, so in that moment, I was just it was like building inside. I was like, oh my gosh. Oh boy, here I go. Oh no, oh no. I'm falling. I can't fall in love this quick. Is that possible?
You thought that right away?
I mean, I started having these thoughts.
At the restaurant?
At the restaurant. I was definitely into him. But then I thought,
glad you came to Nashville.
Yeah, I was really, well, I was glad. The psychic that I met with months before told me that I would be in the South a lot. I thought she was full of it. Now I know. I'll send anyone to her now.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, yes, I know. She was great. But so, no, I did think he was wonderful, but I was like, I've got to go back to LA. I'm not going to, I put the brakes on the feelings.
And you're like hardcore pursuing movies.
Yeah. And I was pursuing it and I was in it and I'm just like, I'm an actor. A guy like life is in LA, you know,
yes.
It's not really, I'm not like Scarlett Johansson. So no, LA wouldn't miss me too much.
One movie away.
It's so true. But no, so he was very, he was very charming, and what got me actually was the next morning, he called me in the morning, not text me, he called, he picked up the phone, dialed my number, and he was like, hey, sunshine, that's a horrible accent, sunshine, and he called me sunshine, and I literally almost dropped the phone, I was like, he just called me sunshine.
You're like, either this guy is my husband, or he's the biggest con artist that ever lived.
Yeah, totally, well, I definitely thought that for a minute, so then I thought, oh my gosh, I don't know anything about him, I've got to, like, look into this guy, like, what if he's, like, he could be a serial killer.
Because this feels too good to be true for
a first way too
so
good to
far.
Be true. He's real slick and cute and just, like, that smile. You're a little slick, but, like, in a good way.
It's funny
slick.
That he thought he was going to, like, flub it, but then, in your mind, it's like, he's got all the moves.
Oh, yeah.
I love the alternate perspective.
He definitely, but then that night, we met up again, and he came to the birthday party.
That night, it was the next night.
It was the next night.
After he called you and said,
after
morning,
that morning
sunshine.
He called me and we invited him to the whatever it was. So we ended up hanging out again, and that's when I sent that text to my mom that said, I think I'm sitting next to my future husband, and we took a picture. And then the third day
I didn't see the text until our
wedding.
Yeah,
he didn't
day.
See it till our wedding day. Yeah, my mom saved it.
Mom framed it and put it on.
It was really sweet. And then the third day, he was leaving to go out of town again, and I was leaving back to Los Angeles, and we had our first proper date at the airport. And I'll never forget that. Yeah,
right.
The guy, when we were going through security, thought we were married for years. He said something to us. I'll never forget that. And and then we had a long, long distance for a long time.
I was going to say, this is only part
this
of the
This is just the beginning of the love story.
Nobody probably cares about the whole thing, but they do need the whole picture, which is, it was... It was a 4.5, 4 years.
It was almost a 5 year.
Well, four or five year journey. That was tough.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't trade a second of it because we got to know each other so intimately, the hard parts and the good parts throughout that relationship. But we thought geography was going to get the best of us at one point.
We used to have conversations while we were together about how this isn't going to work because of our location.
No, then we broke up for a while.
Just a couple times, I think, maybe twice.
Yeah. And then it was interesting that both of us, I would say, had somewhat of a spiritual awakening individually, solo journeys.
Like, what happened? How did the spiritual awakening happen? And what did you learn?
Surrender.
That has been, if I have ever learned one thing, I remember the first time I ever experienced surrendering, and it is the most liberating feeling because you realize, why are you even trying to control it anyway?
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
So true. Yeah. Because you have no control. If it's meant to be, it'll be.
And surrendering to love is a whole other ball of wax than surrendering to your own personal journey.
Yeah.
I feel like, because like, we were sort of talking about this earlier, loving someone, there's so many things you have to do to love someone.
100%.
You have to get so far outside of yourself, even if you love them.
Yeah, and we knew we loved each other, but I think, and I always tell this to my friends or anyone who's like looking for love, or I guess I learned from Onsite, I'm a love addict. I'm not a sex addict. I'm a love addict. let's just make that clear. And I didn't know what that meant. I got really offended in the beginning when I heard that. But love addiction is like, you're always looking for that feeling, that romance. I think it's everyone, honestly. Like, we all want to have a romance, like that fairy tale kind of.
Yes.
What were you going to say?
I just said that I don't want to. That's different than love addiction. It's not everyone, because there are some love addicts out there that really struggle. When it gets obsessive.
Maybe I'm not obsessive with it. I was like, why don't I have that feeling all the time? Like when I look on Instagram and I see all these people and they're like throwing each other in the air and they're like catching each other. And I'm like, that is not real life. Real life is making a choice to love someone. And that's what I did with Miles. I remember, I will never forget it. We were either going out to Onsite, we were going somewhere, and we were in the middle of this awful, like, figuring it out again. And he just looked at me, he's like, I can't do this anymore. What are you doing? Because I was trying to almost be mean. I don't know what I was trying to get out of it.
Just go through all the
I was just like trying to, maybe if I poke him enough, he'll like throw me in the air and catch me and like I'll become Cinderella. I don't know what I was looking for. And then I remember but he flipped. He said, I can't do this anymore. We need to make a choice right now. And I remember in that moment thinking, this is it. I'm about to lose this guy and I don't want to. And I really need to choose to love him the way I know I love him, and to be loving and to act loving and not just, you know, stop running back to California, stop acting like a jerk,
just be present
and be love. Like,
And be love.
Yeah.
I swear to you, I had a similar thing with Michael, my husband. We dated 4 years, broke up 2 years, and that whole yo-yo of like, everyone see us and think, oh my gosh, you guys have this awesome marriage. Right. And we do, but it's only because we both choose love too. You have to choose love.
Choose love.
And see the best in the other person.
Yeah, you have to see that. And you take, like, I know, Miles knows what he's getting with me. He knows the good, he knows the bad. And like, that's one thing that I love so much about our relationship is he really is able to see through like the crazy parts of me and through the parts when, like, even now having a child, like I've had the depression that follows pregnancy that a lot of women get. And, he's just been able to really understand and love me through it. And not like, there's been times where I was like, I would leave myself if I were me. Like, I don't know who I am right now. And, I think that's one thing. Being in a relationship with somebody who does what he does has its like benefits, and then it obviously has times where I'm like, you're not my therapist, but I'm like, but he's so great at letting me like go through my process and actually helping me kind of come out of parts that are really like hard that I can't see, like my stubbornness, like walking out of my own way and just letting me kind of circle back and be like, okay, you know, this is what's going on.
It is so interesting though, especially when you get in a relationship like you guys, where y'all are both, like you said, working on yourself. You're having your individual revelations, and then you're having revelations together as a partner. Like, I feel like that is how you really build a foundation for something that can last. You have to deal with it. You have to get dirty. You have to get into the nitty-gritty, face the parts that are ugly.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, do you think a lot of people are just too scared to even analyze their own self. So then when it comes to being in a relationship, they don't want to, they can't go there with someone else.
I do. Yeah. Actually, when you all were saying earlier about you just have to choose love as a couple, I was thinking first you got to choose love here.
You yourself. Have to love yourself first.
I almost think love, I think grace almost trumps it. I think until I learn to be gracious about myself and my process, there's no way I could extend that to another human. Mm-hmm. Unconsciously, I had this judgment and this microscope on her process, which was not fair at all because all it was is a reflection of my own process. Mm-hmm. And so I think what helped us get there was we both had the courage to do our own work. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen naturally. We kind of were forced into it because our relationship was just colliding. Mm-hmm. And we ended up being this great mirror for each other. And the mirror initially was like, let's look at our relationship. That's what's wrong with this situation. And then it was like, well, no, actually both of us have individual work to do. And when we started reconciling our own story, we put down the microscope, which we had on each other, and picked up the mirror, which was our relationship. And we were like, we've got something pretty special. Mm-hmm. When we get out of the way of it, surrender and realize there's more to this relationship, meaning us and, you know, I know God, and then it changed things.
Yeah. And we still have them, like, I'll put the mirror up on him all the time, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Like, to this day, I'll still, and then I have that moment where I've got just take it down and be like, this is my issue, not his, you know?
Yeah.
I'd say we're pretty good at catching. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would assume that we got it together, and we don't, but we do. I love the way you reframe that in the beginning. I think an absence of conflict is dangerous in relationships.
Totally.
And we've got pretty
That's
healthy.
That's a great way of putting it.
And I had, when we first met, I literally had never, I don't think I ever fought with any guy I'd ever dated, ever, literally.
So you would just, like, stuff it.
I would stuff it for days, like, for years. I mean, I stuffed it my whole life. And then,
oh my gosh,
he taught me that if you argue with me, I'm not going to break up with you. Like, I'm not going to leave you. And I think that that was so important because I was used to if something wasn't going right, it was over, you know?
Yeah.
And he taught me also how to have a healthy argument. You know, there's ways to fight and for it to be healthy. And, you know, there's like that tipping point where it can be like really bad, a bad, bad fight where you don't want to get to that point. Or mm-hmm. there's times where if you stuff it for too long, you just lose it. And that's what I was doing. And then he taught me to unleash it so well that now I'm always just like, rah!
Now it's just flying free all the time. Now, congratulations, like Miles. Yeah. You have done well.
Yeah.
You're giving me too much credit. A lot of this you intuitively had. You just did never, I don't think, been in an emotionally safe enough place mm-hmm. or relationship to be able to express who you are. Because I don't think I ever was like, let me show you this. It was just like, let me love you. Yeah. And you know, that's who you deserve to be.
Yeah. Why do you guys think so many people are so unhappy in the world? Like, where does the root of unhappiness come from? And, you know, like people wanting social, this is an influencer series. So like, I feel like social media can be an amazing tool and you guys use it in an amazing way, but it can also be such a terrible tool and it can bring out so much unhappiness in other people's. Like, where does that unhappiness stem from? And if you were going to heal the world, how would we do that? Like, how would you encourage, what is it that's driving people to the darkness or to lashing out on people instead of dealing with it? Do people just not want to face their own demons? Where does all that come from? I guess that's a very long question. Does any of it make sense?
A lot of it makes a lot of sense actually. And I know Miles, we both have, like, I do a lot of comparing, which
it's
is
so easy.
It's
to
so
compare.
Easy to do. And it's so dangerous. And social media is not everything. That's why I like to do a lot of realness in my stories and a lot of realness just on what I'm talking about, because I think it's so important for the world to see, I mean, that real life is not, I mean, social media, a beautiful picture on Instagram is not real life. Real mm-hmm. life is we woke up at 6, the baby's been crying, we had an argument, no one ate. This is, but then we had great moments throughout the whole day. And, mm-hmm. When I want to go zone out and look at something, I have to stop looking at all the pretty perfect things because those people have the same issues that we have.
Exactly.
And I know that you probably could answer the question as well in a different way. Yeah.
Well, I would just echo a little bit of what you said and what you shared. I do think we're the most disconnected, numbed out, medicated cohort in history. And there's some research to support that due to addiction rates and mental health rates and what we're seeing in our culture right now. It's a it's a scary and confusing time. It can be a little overwhelming to be in our culture and try to figure out how to navigate it. And we're seeing it getting worse with younger people. Mm. So why is it? I think that's a layered answer. There's a lot of reasons I think we've headed that way. But I think the main reason is we stopped valuing truth. Our vulnerability, our authenticity, and our truth. I don't know that we ever really did, but I think a compound effect over all these generations, it's finally caught up with us, where people don't have permission to put down the act. And now social media is just kind of fueling the fire. And actually what you said, but what do we do about it? I think self-awareness, self-compassion is our superpower. If I could blanket that into our government and into our leadership and into our faith-based leaders that know you before you try to know me and teach me.
Yes. Why do we not learn that? Seriously. Why do we not teach that in the beginning?
Well, I think if the world could get a PhD in themselves, we'd have a lot better world. Because when's the last time you saw a high-ranking government official own a weakness? Or stand up in a debate and say, I struggle with this.
See, that's why I want Oprah to be president.
I know.
Me and you both. Thank
me too. Oh, my gosh.
But I need to say about you, we both have a set of insecurities, and I think a lot of people think, even you, that because I've got my career and what I do, that I'm better at it than you are. But when it comes to social media, I would completely disagree. You've got a resilience muscle when it comes to an unfiltered putting yourself out there that I so respect, and I struggle with it because I've been a behind the scenes person forever who in the last 2 years have said, if I'm going to do anything, I got to put myself out there. And I struggle doing that without worrying about what people think and what they're going to say. I think you've been on camera since you were a kid, and you've been in auditions getting rejected since you were a kid, which working with the acting community, I hate that. I mean, we help people rewrite that traumatic narrative for years where people said, you're too fat, you're too all that crap. But it did build this resilience muscle in you where you handle rejection really well. And you don't mind stretching and putting yourself out there. You don't have to edit what you say for the most part. Maybe I'll do a little, but it's pretty remarkable. And she's helped me do it. Like I'm saying, cause I get insecure about certain things like grammar and spelling. It's not my strong suit. And I'm like, but yet people think I'm smart. I don't think I'm that smart, but
you're smart.
When I post them, I'm like, this has to, and I'll get her to look at it or I'll get,
Overanalyzing it.
And she's like, send it. Quit thinking about it.
Yeah, I type and send.
That's exactly what I do. Yeah. And I can type a whole book out, and then I'm like, too. I'll go back and edit it with spelling later. I'm like, oh, well, shoot.
I think women overall are better at it.
I think so, too, because Michael struggles with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I do think women are better. Michael struggles with that, too. He's always thinking about his captions and stuff. I think it's because girls are so talky. I'm not trying to, like, genderize this, but on the whole, girls are chatty and nurturing, and they want to, like, just spill the beans.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a theory on it. I think women are more emotionally available. And when you have more availability to emotion, that makes you emotionally stronger. Mm. And I think historically it's totally backwards. Everybody thinks men are strong, so they put you in, you know, there's never been a female president and all that. I think we've had that backwards for years. Women are overall, I mean, 70% of the people that come to on-site are women. That should be reversed. Because you don't see...
Because women are willing to work on it.
That's it. Women are willing to work on themselves. It doesn't scare them as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to ask y'all a few questions. Just tell me what comes to mind. Love is...
Beautiful.
Grace.
Darkness is...
Ooh.
Real.
Could be healing.
It's got to be a one-word answer?
No.
Okay. I could keep going. I like the one-word answer.
Yeah, I like that.
Darkness is real and could be healing. Okay, break those two down.
Like, I feel like all the darkness I've ever been in, afterwards, there's been so much growth and light that I almost liked staying in those dark places for a while. Like, I remember my LA days. Like, I have, like, dark days there. I had dark hair. I was dark. Everything was dark in my life. Like, yeah. But after all that, there became something beautiful from it. You know,
totally.
A lesson, or
if you're willing to, find
if you're willing
lesson,
to, yeah, and to see it, yeah, and do the work, and then not every single time, obviously,
yeah,
but most of the time there would be something, and I'd be like, oh, that's okay, I get that.
Darkness doesn't exist without light. Light doesn't exist without darkness. So I think you have to acknowledge it. So the social media thing. I work out with the same group of guys 4 or 5 days a week, and we've turned the workout into, okay, this taps the physical side. What are we doing on the emotional side and spiritual side? So on the emotional side, we started giving each other a challenge. And once a day we do a challenge, but we determine the challenge based on what we find is a deficit among us. And so if social media is an invader in my relationship, which it is, I take it into the bedroom and I shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, like, the last thing I do is hug my wife or go to my wife, I'm on social media checking emails, then that's dark for us right now. But unless I acknowledge it, then the challenge became, and I'm doing it for Lent, which I don't even practice Lent. I didn't grow up with that tradition, but I'm trying to keep the phone out of the bedroom until Easter, which I've done an okay job on.
Oh, nice.
Halfway.
Oh. It's been okay.
We appreciate the effort.
It was okay. Yeah. It's been a couple nights.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That is great, though, have accountability and call yourself out on it.
Yeah, and he's amazing at doing that stuff. It's like, just did another one that I love, the no complaining thing. Oh, my gosh.
No complaining for a day.
That is so hard. I thought it was a week.
Oh, I know.
I was complaining about the rain. He's like, no complaining. I'm like, but it's raining. No.
I know. It, if you catch yourself, if you intentionally do things like that to catch yourself,
mm-hmm.
I know. Gosh, there's just always so many things to work on. As soon as I like hit a level where I'm like, oh, I have a spiritual breakthrough. I'm feeling great. And then immediately, like, I feel like I just get hit again. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm back on the ground. Like, when is this ever going to end?
Mm-hmm. I like that you're doing that, though. I think that everyone should do something like that every like once a week. Where I think it's something that we should do together in our relationship. Like, pick one thing.
That's smart.
Like, every Sunday that we want to do for the week. You've really done the no complaining thing. You have not complained about anything.
Well, and I think, too, though, I think so many people don't take the time, like you guys have both said this whole time, to hold themselves accountable, to even take inventory of what they're doing, and to be like, okay, I need to work on myself. Like, I actually need to work on me. So many people just breeze through their lives and let whatever happens to them, they're reacting to it. Right. They're living in their reactions. Totally. They're living in their traumas. Instead of being like, okay, I don't have to live here.
Yeah. And we're never done working on ourselves till the day we die. I mean,
no, we have the choice to see it differently.
Right.
Yeah, you're so right.
Yeah.
It's actually not that. It's kind of fun for the most part. There are parts of my introspective process where I've had to work on myself that just sucked. I mean, when it was like really hard. But the everyday stuff becomes easier and easier. I think it's just like working out. You don't run, it's like running a marathon. You don't just do that. You have to warm up to it and practice it and get your emotional muscles worked out.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm doing it, I would much rather sit around a table and talk about. So somebody challenged me the other day because we do this game where we come up with, we need to have you guys over for dinner sometime.
Yes, we'd love to come.
So I don't want to tell you much about it. We love getting cards that just provoke deep conversations. And
Michael and I love to deep talk.
Good.
Yeah, we love to deep talk.
Because most people be like, I ain't coming to dinner there.
Yeah. Oh, no, horrible. It's our favorite. We do it like every night, drink wine and talk about everything. We don't have babies yet.
It's fun. But we do it, and somebody, a friend was over the other night, he said, you need to turn this into a game called Cards for Humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, yes.
Actually, you should, and copyright. Go on Oprah with Dr. Phil. You already have an in with Dr. Phil. Make him and do it on his show. Mm-hmm. Get Oprah involved. Done.
Well, but you think, I mean, think about
the world would be safe.
Thought-provoking, emotional, deep conversations can be fun if we practice them in community.
Yeah. Why do you guys think, because you guys have both followed your calling, like you've pursued acting your whole life, you switch careers to follow your calling. Why do you think so many people don't follow their calling? Because we all feel it. Like, you know, like you feel that tinge. Like every time I've walked down a road that I thought was shiny and sparkly and should be the road, but it wasn't, I feel that huge resistance, you know? But when you're on the right road, it feels free and open. But so many people, why won't they commit to their calling? Instead, they're just like, oh, I couldn't be one of those people that had a life where I got to do what I loved. A lot of people will just say those things.
I think a lot of it, I think it's a lot of fear. For me, at least, even as pursuing acting, I was working as a waitress, or I was doing anything to make ends meet just to be able to do what I love to do. And I think that fear takes over, and you go into that place of, well, this isn't working out, and I need to just get a job where I can make money and I can have a family and I can do a thing.
And
who do I think I am? But I think if you just sort of, and it's not just as easy as it seems, like, oh, I'm going to start a business and it's going to be successful. I mean, that's just not reality for a lot of people. But I think that if you are genuinely, like my dad always said, find something you love to do that you're good at, that you can make money at. It's like, it might, I don't want to say I didn't make millions of dollars as an actress. I struggled as an actress, mm-hmm. big time. I mean, even when I was working as an actress and doing movies or TV shows, I still wasn't making enough money to even get by half the time because California's expensive. And I had those moments of, I'm just going to give this up. But I kept going. But then your life, like, I think that if you follow your heart and follow where you're going, like, I chose love. I moved to Nashville. Nashville took me to Miles. I kind of backed off on acting. I'm still doing it a little, but then like all these other little opportunities
but your road,
came out.
That's another thing. You can evolve right. in your dream too.
And I love acting, but like I found this joy in, obviously being a mom is like the best joy I've ever experienced, but now I'm doing the blog and I've started a store out at OnSite that I love because people that go through there get to go shop for things that make them happy. And I started a jewelry line. I'm doing all these things that kind of
fulfill that passion
inside of me. And you know, if an acting job comes along, great, I'll take it. But it's just sort of...
You let yourself be open.
Letting myself be open to opportunities. And maybe I want to be an interior decorator. I want to, like, dress people for their life just because, like, I love fashion. So whatever, if something like that were to come my way, I might open that door, you know?
I totally agree. Following your passion but being open mm-hmm. to letting mm-hmm. it evolve.
Yes.
I feel like I have done that too. Started in music and, like, I twisted me here. But yeah. I would have never gotten here if I hadn't followed the curiosity. But so many totally. People just won't go down that road.
Right.
Because they hit one roadblock or they get intimidated one mm-hmm. time and they're like, nope, I'm out. Yeah. Bye. I'm going to go like settle for something else. And it's not that I'm judging people for that, but I think that if people would follow their calling, they'd be so much happier in their lives.
Well, I think it's fear of failure a lot, but there are practical things that could keep some people from going after what they want, depending on what it is. You got socioeconomic challenges and some people don't have the opportunity to step outside of what they're doing to make a living if they're trying to support families. Meaning if I wanted to play, you know, Major League Baseball, but yet I've got to support a family, mm-hmm. it's a little late to get started on
right.
that. However, I think overall you're right. I think most people would have a fear that if I were to do this, there's a good chance I would fail, and we're naturally adverse to failure. Mm-hmm. But yet failure, every time I have failed, all the failures have led up to me doing, honestly, I can say exactly what I want to be doing right now. And there's other things I dream about and I want to do, and I know I'm going to pivot and do other things and try stuff, but I'm doing exactly what I want to do, and it's because I've failed a lot at other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I failed trying to do what I want to do.
Yeah. And I think that's always really comforting to hear. I actually think I started this podcast 2 years ago because I literally just wanted to get inside of people's heads who had done really amazing things, because I always was so afraid of... I always had self-worth issues. Mm-hmm. I always thought like, ugh, I could never do this. Who am I? I'm not talented enough. I'm
Me
not
too.
Good enough.
Totally.
But now talking to people for so many, two years now, like once a week to very interesting people like yourself, mm-hmm. I have come to realize, and I'm sure you guys have realized this through y'all's lines of work, everybody is struggling. Everybody is insecure. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own bag of shit that they're Absolutely. Carrying around that they have to figure out how to deal with and overcome. And that has given me so much comfort to be braver, just knowing that we're all in it. Nobody has this like perfect mm-hmm. ride. Like now it's even like hilarious to me that I ever thought anyone ever did.
I know.
You know, because like you guys were saying, comparison, you can easily compare. But once you really get to like know the stories, everybody is going through something and you just have to like...
Yeah,
go all in.
Everyone's fighting their own fight. And that's why I think it's so important to share about it. And that's why Miles and I like to be open and vulnerable with our struggles, because we're helping, if we share where we're at and we're in the process of like, if we're in the midst of like a real big struggle, we share it and someone's like, oh, you're not alone. And I'm like, oh, I'm so glad that I brought that up, because mm-hmm. had I not brought it up, then I don't feel alone anymore, you know?
Totally.
I just think it's so important to be real and to not pretend that you're okay if you're not okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be okay. Like that's one thing.
It's okay to be not okay.
It's okay to not be okay.
Yes.
Yeah. So... And I think that I'm not okay a lot of the time.
Me too. Like,
you know?
All the time.
So yeah, like I have like a meltdown at least once a day, especially totally. As a new mom. Like all these things and trying to be a good wife and trying to take care of things and trying to just manage it all. It's like, and I'm a career person. I always thought I was at least, you know?
I know. That's my biggest fear with motherhood.
Well, it changes you. Yeah. Well, you know what? You're in the, if you're, everyone's go,
well, I was so scared I'm going to like lose myself and you work so hard to get this thing going in your career and you just finally get your head on straight. And I feel like for the first time in my life, I'm like, okay, I'm feeling good about myself. And then you have a baby and everything. Then
you have to start over. You do lose yourself a little. And the thing is like, I said this to somebody the other day and they reassured me. They said it so perfectly. They said, having a baby is like, it's like the death of who you were. And then you're becoming this new person and you don't know that person anymore. So you're trying to figure out who you are all of a sudden, but your husband still knows who he is. He's still working. Mm-hmm. Thank God. I'm so grateful. Like I wouldn't be able to do any of the things, half the things I'm doing if he wasn't like a stable person. I'm more of like, oh, like floating around like a butterfly. I'll do this. I'll do that. But I think that really being able to talk and say, you know, also, mom brain, I literally have no idea what I was just saying.
No, we're talking about...
like, not one clue, like, why I'm on this rampage.
I think the overall thing is, it's okay to not be okay.
Yes.
I have mom brain, too.
That like, was brilliant. I good reason. I don't think you knew either.
What rabbit hole is she going down right now?
You know what? That was a great...
But it is okay to not be okay, mm-hmm. and especially as females. Like, I do want to talk about that one point you said... Mm-hmm. That has been my number one fear about having kids is I am so scared of losing my life.
Yes, that's like, what we were talking about.
Yes, I love my marriage the way it is right now. I love that we can do whatever we want right now. Mm-hmm. I love that I feel like my career is finally like getting on a path that I love. And it's like, once you have a baby, I am so afraid of losing myself. But you can't, once again, have fear run the show.
But you become this amazing new you. And, like, you will find that person again. I'm slowly finding her again. I don't know still who she is, but, like, I'm finding out that I like doing other things I used to do a lot less. And things that I used to care about, I don't care about anymore.
Your priorities get real clear.
They do.
What has being a new dad taught you? And what have you learned about what goes on with women when and all this? Because women really, it's a lot of changing.
Poor Miles, he's like, I learned a lot.
It is a lot of change. I what have I learned? More than I could summarize, I can say that. But the good news is, it's exactly what you said about changing to, oh, hi, girl. Come on Dakota. In so we know
come
what's going
on. In.
That's our pup. I'm not sure if she's in the
our
screenshot.
Our first child.
Sweet baby.
She heard us talking about her. But I think we went into it, or I went into it with a realistic expectation of how we were going to become parents, meaning it's going to be messy. We're not going to do it perfectly. I don't know one parent on the planet that didn't screw up their kids some. And then there's extreme cases where people did awful things. But for the most part, everybody's... It's an imperfect process. Mm-hmm. So I went into it with an open stance. I didn't read a lot because naturally I'm a reader. I would research like, how do you be the perfect dad? And how do you do secure attachment? And all the stuff I care about. And I was like, screw that. I'm just going to heart instinct. Mm-hmm. God, I'm going to talk to other dads, other moms, and we're going to figure this thing out because it's what we're wired to do. We're naturally wired to do that. So, but I have learned patience and grace at a whole new level.
Yeah.
I would say more with our relationship than with my son. Just because it has put an incredible strain on you. And I get it. I mean, a lot of people talk about, do you mind me sharing?
No.
A lot of people talk about postpartum depression. Not many talk about postpartum anxiety. And it's a real thing. Especially you carry some anxiety anyway, which I do too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it really accelerated once the baby got here.
I bet.
I read about that some. I was like, first moms, they can get super protective and fear a lot about. But you've certainly had a lot of that. But every turn we've talked about it.
Yeah.
Every single turn we've talked about it. And I honestly, as hard as our relationship can be some days now, harder than it was, I'm going to be honest, harder than it was pre-baby.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
It's never been better.
Oh.
I feel more in love watching her as a mom. I do.
Yo, you're making me cry. I was trying to be honest, cry.
No, but I feel more in love watching her as a mom than I ever have. Thanks. More so than the day that I married you. It's just, it is the most beautiful thing. I ask the question every day, why did I wait till now? And so, but I had a lot of the fears you did too about it's going to change things. And it has, but it's changed things in a beautiful way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, that's a great place to wrap up because I could talk to her forever. I like to leave with leave your light So this whole, obviously, this whole thing has been inspirational. But leave some inspiration to especially young people who are maybe trying to get their lives going, want to get into entertainment, want to matter, want to find their self-worth. Like, leave some inspiration of just how you want to inspire people.
Okay. I feel like I don't, I don't know a lot about a lot, but I know a little about something. No. I think that what I would say is, I started everything, I feel like, a little later in life. We got married later in life, and we had a baby later in life, and I always thought, oh, I want to do it all early, and I want to have it all together, and I think that you're on your path. If you're not married yet and you're looking for love, just be patient. Don't settle, is what I always tell people to do. Just do not settle. Someone will find you, and just, if you love something, follow your heart. If you have a passion, if you want to be a social media person, you know, get on there and do it. But don't do it because you want to be famous. Do it because you want to make a change. Do it because you love what you're doing. And just really embrace, like, if you're in a relationship and you're struggling, like, embrace each other. Talk to each other. Just choose love, like, every day. I'm trying more and more to choose love because I can have a tendency to not choose it as much and be resentful. And then, but, yeah, choose love. And
I love that.
Yeah.
That love is good. I don't know that I can say anything better than that.
You're good at wrapping things up and putting it all, like, in good
little,
wording.
In a little bow.
Yes.
Put a bow on it for us.
I really don't have a bow today, but I'll... oh, wow. I spent a lot of time, I still do, but not near what I used to, focusing on, worrying about, obsessing about, in fear about things that just didn't matter that much. And I don't do that as much. There are still days when I can forget about all the beautiful things, but when I sit and I connect with my wife and I think about my son, I mean, I can't wait to go see my son. He's just in a moment. Then that's what matters the most. And career is awesome. Chase it. Have a big time. But be anchored in who you are and who you love. And if you don't have that, start with you. It is out there. But anchor into what matters, and the rest of the world will kind of start to fall in place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that was a perfect bow.
He's a great bow putter of the bows. I don't have my words these days.
But you did ask something, and you can take this out if you want. That needs to be where we stop. But I think creators, because you said, what about people who want to get into entertainment? I have watched so many people get into that, thinking about what it's going to do to them personally. They just think about, this is what I want. And
all the fancy things that come with it.
Trying to get your art out there in a meaningful way requires you to build a platform to deliver it. And building a platform means you're signing up for a public profession. Public professions create abnormal life circumstances. They just do. Mm-hmm. Abnormal life circumstances create high levels of stress. High levels of stress create loneliness, addictions, depression, anxiety, all of which kill creativity. And so the very thing that brought you to the dance for entertainers is your creativity, and you're signing up for a career that in some ways is designed to kill it.
Interesting.
That's not a bad thing, but I just want people to know that before you sign up for the dance, that protect your creativity, meaning protect your heart.
So. I love that.
That's a big bow.
Mm-hmm. And so true. That makes so much true. Sense.
Thanks.
Yeah, it really does.
Vanessa and Miles, I'm voting y'all for president.
Oh.
First power couple for president. I vote. Seriously, y'all would heal the world.
Oh.
Thanks.
Caroline.
How amazing was that interview? Are you not just blown out of the water by their wisdom? They're so young. What an incredible couple. It is so incredible and inspiring to see couples who have done so much personal work so that they can become such a strong, united force. That was such an inspiring interview. Hope y'all loved it. And you guys, we are not even done at all with the influencer series. We're probably about 3/4 of the way finished, but I have another influencer episode coming at you next week. You will not want to miss it.